It is my great fortune to be here amongst you, although I did not expect to be here without your dear, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. I came here to enjoy, but I see I have been put to work. Of course, working for Krishna is enjoyment. But I never expected that I would have the great responsibility of alone addressing such a wonderful audience. What to say about Lord Nityananda? I spoke this morning about Lord Nityananda's bestowing his mercy upon Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And one devotee asked me after the class, "You didn't speak anything about economics or the world situation." Said, "What can I do? Different ways on different days." But in thinking what to speak about tonight, I am meditating on the scorching heat of the blazing fire of material existence, and how people are feeling that even more, although they're supposedly more materially advanced, or they have the option or the possibility to become more materially advanced, yet they are feeling the blazing fire of material existence even more. Nitai Parakamala Koti Chandra Shushitala. You know that Vaishnav song, how the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda are more soothing than millions of moons. Also, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes the face of Lord Nityananda as being more beautiful than millions of moons. And the devotees of Lord Nityananda are like bees buzzing around his lotus feet. To understand the scorching predicament of the world today, we have to accept the basic reality that fruitive activity, karmic activity, worsens our plight. This is a difficult concept to grasp because it seems natural that we live in this world in such a way that we advance our position. It seems so natural. Who would think that we should live in such a way that we just stand still materially? There's a notion covering the world today that materially things should constantly get better and better. And that betterment is measured in terms of material prosperity as evidenced by economic development, consumerism, material comforts, and so forth. In spite of such intricacies of material advancement, we see that internally people are falling apart. They cannot stand up to the pressures of the world today. Let me give you some background about this excruciatingly scorching heat that people are feeling today from the blazing fire of material existence, although Supposedly things are more advanced than ever before. When I was a little boy going to primary school in the 50s, the teachers told us that the world will become so materially advanced in just a couple of decades, and that certainly by the end of the 20th century, by the year 2000, the major problem in the world would be that people have too much leisure time. So therefore, the school teachers were telling the children, the best future career that you can plan for is to be a leisure time engineer. Devising solutions for people how to deal with all the leisure time that they're going to have. The capitalists were promising so much leisure time, people wouldn't know what to do with it. And the communists, they were promising so much leisure time that people wouldn't know what to do with it. We see that no matter what political system people embrace, no matter what economic system, the end result is always the same. Everyone is working harder and harder and harder. This shows you the real taskmaster is not this economic system or that political system. The real taskmaster is Maya. She's always cracking the whip. You want to improve materially? You must suffer then. But this seems counterintuitive to us. It doesn't seem right. What seems natural and right is that I should work to improve my material condition. And when I have the financial means to improve my material condition, I'll be happier. Things will be better. Doesn't that seem so logical? If we take away that impetus for fruitive activity, what will we do? People worry. I won't know what to do with myself if I don't dedicate my energies to material advancement. Yet we see that people are internally suffering more than ever before. They can't bear the heavy load of the supposedly materially advanced society. Time is so consumed by the workday life. Commuting to work, and then long hours at work, 12 hours a day. Add on to that 2 to 4 hour commute. So now, what is the latest realization? Soon to be exported to India. The latest realization is that work is home. Because people are spending so much time at work, that's obviously the most important situation in their life. The family life is just a shadow. The work life is the reality. That's where your friends are. That's where your social relations are. You spend more time with your fellow workers and employees than you do at home. So therefore, the workplace relationships are the foremost. And then what naturally follows? The family breaks apart. The family is discarded. So that now, in the USA, for example, you have more children living in broken homes than in homes with the original mother and father. This is what happens when work becomes home. But people, what can you do? This is how the situation is. We're just trying to survive. We have no choice. We either take these circumstances or we're finished. So this is the blazing fire of material existence. Any material attempts to fix a material situation simply make things worse. That's Prahlad Maharaj's verdict in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam. The cure is worse than the disease. Again, this seems difficult to understand. We think, I am a person. I'm living in this world. I have a body. I have a mind, intelligence. What is wrong with my striving to improve my material situation? If I improve my material situation, things will be better. Isn't that obvious? So therefore, when we read Bhagavad Gita, when we read Srimad Bhagavatam about fruitive activity, that term seems to be some kind of abstract or vague term that doesn't apply to us. Fruitive activity. We think, I'm just trying to do what's necessary to improve my situation, like everyone else. What is wrong with that? We hear about punya and papa, pious activity, impious activity. We hear about endeavors for gratifying the senses. But it all seems so distant to us because something in our heart tells us, I'm just trying to do the best I can. What more can you expect of me in this world? We are trapped in the blazing fire of material existence. We can't improvise or adjust our way out. This is the message of the Acharyas. This is the message of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. You can't get out of this trap materially by adjusting this way, adjusting that way. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Manashastan indriyani prakriti stani karshati. You living entities, you're all my parts. Krishna claims us, you're all mine eternally. But you're in a very abnormal, perverse, distorted situation. Yet we feel that it's normal. We feel that it's just life as it is. But no, Krishna says, prakriti stani karshati. We are stuck in the oppressive material atmosphere and we're struggling with the six senses, including the mind. Part of the mysticism of Maya is that you think it's normal to be in this situation. Lord Kapiladeva explains this psychological phenomenon in the third canto of Bhagavatam. He says that no matter how abominable a situation the living entity is in material existence, some or other the living entity, by the grace, by the mercy of Maya, feels it's normal. It's just the way things are. That's life. No matter what species of life you take, what body you take, you feel that this is it. This is the way things are. This is the thick covering of Maya. We don't recognize the full import of being stuck in the oppressive material atmosphere, prakriti stani karshati, and struggling. We take the struggle as just, I'm making my way through life. That's the way it is. I'm just doing my best, trying to get the things that everyone else has. How can you blame me? Fruitive activity, karmic activity, that's for others. But in my case, I'm just trying to get what I need, and of course, a little bit more. So again, when we read Bhagavad Gita, when we read Srimad Bhagavatam about fruitive activity, it seems so far from us, yes? That's for the other people. I'm just doing the necessary. And what's wrong with trying to be happy? What's wrong with trying to make my loved ones happy? What's wrong with that? Lord Rishabhdev in the fifth canto states, Nunam pramata kurute vikarma, yet india pritya apranoti. When one becomes mad, one considers material advancement as the goal of life. Such a consideration is a sign of madness, pramata. Nasadu manye yata atmanoyam. Lord Vishade says, I don't think this is a very sane way to live. You should consider this is not at all intelligent. But we don't consider. And then we say, even if we want to consider, we have no time. Work has become home. That's the way it is. We're trapped. This is the blazing fire of material existence. Then we have the cooling lotus feet of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. There's no material solution to our material predicament. We need a solution that's outside the box. Material intellectuals like Albert Einstein would always say, a problem is never solved on its own level. You have to solve the problem by going to a higher level. But who knows the full meaning of that statement? In order to solve material problems, we must go to the spiritual level. You can't work it out economically, psychologically, unless your attempts are connected to Krishna. Krishna is the source of the material energy. So who knows better than Krishna how to live in this world simply in such a way that we can make spiritual advancement? But to be able to see the clarity of Krishna's instructions takes some special mercy in this age of Kali. The age of Kali is a time which blocks your vision. You can't see. So even though Krishna's instructions are there so clearly, the dense darkness is so great, we can't properly take advantage of those instructions. And in this way, we go through so much unnecessary paranoia, so much unnecessary anxiety. Krishna bhakti looks so attractive, but it cannot practically be lived in today's world. We speak like that as if Krishna doesn't understand our situation. Krishna doesn't understand the world and how to live in it, even though the world comes from Krishna. This is the disease of seeing everything separate from Krishna. We push Krishna out the door, and then we look at our situation and say, it's impossible. What solution can help us? Things are simply getting worse. Well, bring Krishna back in. No, but that's not practical. It's not possible. We have to sort everything out on our own. Bring Krishna back in. No, you don't understand that we worship Krishna, but he should just stay out. Let us sort things in the oppressive material atmosphere. Krishna is for spiritual things, but our lives are material, so we have to be practical. Or, here's a good one. This is Kali Yuga. This is not the spiritual age. Therefore, we have to be material. In Melbourne, Australia, some students from Delhi, they were telling me like this. We are just going with the situation of Kali Yuga. We're going with the flow. It's not the spiritual time. Perhaps, and I hope that whatever hesitations, whatever complications that we imagine about applying the practice of bhakti don't become as foolish as saying this is not the time for spiritual practices. Yet, unfortunately, we can look in our hearts and see some lingering foolishness, no matter how we define it. We imagine so many excuses. You see, there's this problem, there's that problem. Even if we solve the present day problems, tomorrow new problems come. We accept this is the way life is. We just go from problem to problem, and in the meantime, we try to be a little happy in between the problems. That is life. On Lord Nityananda's holy appearance day, we can clearly understand that that is not life. We have another option. There is the soothing lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, which come in the form of the bhakti practices, which are our life and soul. We cannot materially adjust our way out of our situation. I was speaking 2 days ago at the Samaya Educational Institution, and I was explaining to the 150 students so nicely gathered there that there are 4 great myths that are bewildering human society today. These 4 great myths make up what people call normal life. If you can dismantle all these myths, your way forward becomes much clearer. Because we're stuck in the oppressive material atmosphere, the more we materially struggle, the worse things get. This is hard to see without Lord Nityananda's mercy. Just think of a piece of toast covered with jam or honey, and then a fly lands on that piece of toast. The fly is attracted by the sweetness. It looks so nice. Honey-covered piece of toast, a jam-covered piece of toast. The fly lands on it. The fly realizes its mistake and starts to struggle. What is the problem, though? The more the fly struggles, the more the fly is caught. That is our situation in material existence. The message of the parampara is that your foremost effort should not be in material struggle. Your foremost effort should be on getting out of the oppressive material situation. That is real progress. As long as we buy into the four great myths, there'll be no chance for our human life to reach its full potential. And what Lord Nityananda's mercy is about is that the attainment of the full human potential. So the instructions of the parampara are not interfering with our potential. They are bringing us to the real potential. So what are those four myths? Myth number one, money brings happiness. Myth number two, technology brings prosperity. Myth number three, weapons bring security. And myth number four, the earth provides unlimited resources for your exploitation. These myths are the foundations of existence today. And everyone buys into this, although the result is they're suffering so much. When we meditate on the mercy of Lord Nityananda, we see clarity. We can recognize what the problem is. Seeing the problem is half the way to solving it. Maya will never let you see what the problem is. No matter how educated you are, you will not be able to see the problem. Things will look more and more complicated to you. You'll become angry. You'll become frustrated. You'll become proud. You'll become arrogant. But the problem will never be solved. You won't even know what the problem is. Again, you'll just tell yourself, I'm just trying to live a normal life. I'm just trying for a little happiness for myself, for my family, my friends, that's all. What is the problem with that? What is the crime with that? It's very difficult with ordinary vision to see this problem of fruitive activity. How to stop it? Then the mercy of Lord Nityananda enters the situation. Suddenly we can see. Suddenly we can see our way to following the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Suddenly we can understand how to organize our life, balance the material with the spiritual, so that we can focus upon making spiritual advancement. That ability to see the problem, that's the mercy of Lord Nityananda. What to speak of the ability to solve the problem? Therefore we sing Nittai Pada Kamala Koti Chandra Shushitala. The refreshing moon rays of Lord Nityananda's lotus feet. That refreshment, that relief is factual, is not imaginary. We are speaking this morning about how Lord Nityananda serves Lord Chaitanya by giving him his association. And it's often an association that is sometimes funny, very unconventional, and extremely merciful. You all know how Lord Chaitanya wanted to go to Vrindavan. very blissfully he was on his way to Vrindavan, walking through Bengal to get there. Passing the cowherd boys herding their cows, the young cowherd boys would cry out, "Hurry, hurry," and Lord Chaitanya would be so grateful. They're chanting the holy name, "Hurry." He would pat them on the head, "Go on chanting, go on chanting." In this way, Lord Chaitanya would proceed on his way to Vrindavan. But Lord Nityananda got involved in the situation. He took the cowherd boys aside and told them something that he made up a good story. And the end result of his making up a story was that the cowherd boys joined the conspiracy. And when Lord Chaitanya asked them, "Which is the way to Vrindavan?" they pointed him in the direction of the Ganga. That was Lord Nityananda's plan. How to get Lord Chaitanya not to go to Vrindavan, but to go to Advaita Acharya's house in Shantipur. This seems to us that Lord Nityananda, he's going way out on a limb. He's interfering with Lord Chaitanya's pilgrimage to Vrindavan Dham. This is Lord Nityananda. He can do such things. Tell him something else. Divert him. Join with me in this conspiracy. There's a good reason for it, I assure you. So the cowherd boys pointed Lord Chaitanya in the direction of the Ganga. And off Lord Chaitanya went, absorbed in ecstasy. "I'm going to Vrindavan, I'm going to Vrindavan." And then Lord Chaitanya came upon Lord Nityananda. "Surprise! What are you doing here?" Lord Nityananda told him, "I'm also going to Vrindavan. We shall go together." Lord Chaitanya said, "All right, all right. Let us go to Vrindavan together." Lord Nityananda pointed, "Look, don't you see the river? It's the Jamuna." It was a Ganga, but Lord Nityananda was continuing his conspiracy. Meanwhile, Lord Nityananda, he had sent Acharyaratna, Chandrasekhar Acharya. He told him, "I'm going to divert Lord Chaitanya to the house of Advaita Acharya. You go to Navadvip and get all the devotees, get Shachimata, have them wait. I'll have Lord Chaitanya go there." So all this plotting was going on. And meanwhile, Lord Chaitanya is Vrindavan Dham, Jamuna River. So Lord Chaitanya jumped into what he thought was the Jamuna River, chanting mantras, glorifying the Jamuna. And then he saw Advaita Acharya coming toward him in a boat. Lord Chaitanya became a little doubtful. But still, he was going with the flow of the transcendental ecstasies of approaching Vrindavan. So he asked Advaita Acharya, "What are you doing here?" And Advaita Acharya told him the truth. "Actually, welcome to Shantipur." And then, as a dutiful member of the conspiracy, Advaita Acharya at this point, defended Nichinanabu. Nichinanda, he didn't lie to you. He told you this is the Jamuna. And actually, technically that is so. Because at Prayag, the Ganga and the Jamuna merge. So right on this side of the river, you could say it is Jamuna water. Anyway, please come to my house for a simple lunch of a few vegetables only, a little rice. So now Advaitacharya is plotting how to give Lord Chaitanya a huge feast. So you know that he prepares a sitting place for Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and he sits them down. Lord Chaitanya looks at all the huge preparations and says, I am a sannyasi. I cannot eat such rich food, such sumptuous varieties. I cannot do this. It's too much. Please, just give me a few simple vegetables, a little handful of rice, as you promised. And Advaitacharya starts laying down the law. Look, I know who you are. Don't try to hide yourself. I know the reality. At Jagannath Puri, you eat 54 times a day. Hundreds of preparations. So just, please, sit down and honor Prasad. Please do not protest. Still, Lord Chaitanya expressed his reservations. You know, a sannyasi doesn't leave remnants. I cannot eat all this. Advaitacharya assured him, you just take half of every preparation and leave the rest aside. Don't worry. So in this way, Advaitacharya was leading Lord Chaitanya on. You just do like this. Please, let's not make a commotion. Let's just nicely take prasad. And anyway, I know who you are. You see, Lord Chaitanya wanted to show a strict sannyas dharma. I've explained this before on previous Nichananda Prabhu appearance days. He wanted to set an example of the proper execution of dharma. But his intimate cohort, Nichananda Prabhu, that wasn't his portfolio. He had another mission altogether, which was to display the behavior of an avadut, to show no concern for social customs, social norms. So while Lord Chaitanya is concerned, such a vast amount of foodstuffs, such a vast amount of prasad, I cannot do this. What was Lord Nichananda's reaction? You know. Look at this tiny bit of food. I have been fasting for 3 days and hope to end my fast today. Look at this tiny, microscopic amount of food. Advaitacharya said, please, I'm just a poor householder. Please just accept whatever food we can provide. So finally Advaitacharya got both Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to start eating. Lord Chaitanya stopped eating. Every time he would get halfway through a pot containing vegetables, Advaita Chai would fill it up again and push it back at him. This went on and on and on and on. Meanwhile, Nityananda Prabhu, he's also eating like that, but he decides to announce, this food has not been enough to even fill half my belly. Advaita Acharya is on the defensive. I'm ruining my religious principles by having such an unknown person like you at my house. Who knows who you are? What is your caste? Who knows what your designation is? I'm ruining all my Brahminical principles by having you here. Actually, you're just a reject Paramahansa. You're turning everything upside down. Lord Nityananda decided he was going to cause an upheaval. He took some rice and he just threw it on the ground. And some of the rice particles stuck to Advaita Acharya's cloth. And as you know, Advaita Acharya began to dance in ecstasy. Ah, I have been touched by prasad. Grace by prasad from Nityananda Prabhu. This behavior of Lord Nityananda contrasts with that of Lord Chaitanya, although they are both so close. This morning we spoke about how to understand Lord Nityananda. We must go to the topmost portion of the spiritual world where Krishna and Balaram reside. Balaram is the first and intimate expansion of Krishna. That is how close Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are. We spoke this morning about just as Balaram serves Krishna in three ways, so Lord Nityananda serves Lord Chaitanya in three ways. The same three ways: as guru, as servant, and as friend. Lord Chaitanya would not forget this trick by Lord Nityananda to get him to go to Advaita Acharya's house. He will bring it up later. Now we join Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda on their way to Jagannath Puri. When they reach the outskirts of Puri, about 6 miles or 6 kilometers outside of Puri, at a temple, a Lord Shiva temple, Lord Chaitanya asks Lord Nityananda to mind his danda. And Lord Chaitanya goes to offer his respects to Lord Shiva. Nityananda Prabhu immediately knows what to do with the danda. Why is Lord Chaitanya carrying a danda? He's not in any preliminary stage of sannyas. He is at least a Paramahansa. What to speak of beyond a Paramahansa? Lord Chaitanya was carrying his danda to show that the sannyas phases should be followed strictly and that neophyte sannyasis should not artificially think that they are Paramahansas. They should carry their danda. So Lord Chaitanya wanted to uphold Dharma in that way. So on the one hand, you have the strictness of Lord Chaitanya, and on the other hand, you have his intimate associate who's doing something else, totally. This is the variegatedness of the Leelas. As you know, Lord Nityananda takes the danda breaks it into three pieces, and throws it in the Pargi River. After a while, as Lord Chaitanya and his associates proceed on their way, Lord Chaitanya asks Nityananda Prabhu, "Can you please give my danda back?" What is Nityananda Prabhu going to answer? You remember how clever he was in getting Lord Chaitanya to think that the Ganga was a Yamuna. You remember how clever he was in manipulating the cowherd boys. When he asks you which is the way to Vrindavan, you know what to tell him. Trust me, I have a good reason. So naturally, when Lord Chaitanya asks Lord Nityananda, please give me my danda, Nityananda is capable of coming up with a good story. You see, while we were dancing in ecstasy, overwhelmed with love of God, we both fell on the danda and it broke. That's a great story, isn't it? We both fell on the danda, it broke. So then your next question would be, well, all right, where are the pieces of the danda? But Nityananda already had an answer for that. Where the pieces went, I do not know. Lord Chaitanya was angry. He was determined to show the example of strictly following. And Nityananda Prabhu had a completely different determination. Nityananda Prabhu wanted to show the world Lord Chaitanya is no ordinary person. He's beyond Paramahansa, in that as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's never in touch with the material energy, although the material energy emanates from him. He didn't want anyone to take Lord Chaitanya in a material way, to consider him an ordinary sannyasi. So, out with the danda, throw away the pieces. But Mahaprabhu is angry because of his determination to uphold all the strict practices of his ashram. So, in anger, Mahaprabhu said, "I won't walk with you all to Puri. Either I'll go behind you, I'll go in front of you, but we won't walk together." These two escapades by Lord Nityananda would come up later when it was time for Lord Chaitanya to leave Puri to go on a tour of South Africa. Now, just testing you, see if you're right. I want to see that you're awake, so. So, time to go to South India. And Lord Chaitanya had to invent some particular excuse. So you see, even in bhakti, there are these kind of maneuvers. But the intentions are all 100% pure. We should not imitate. But still, we should recognize in the variegateness of bhakti, in the ways of love, there are these telling of stories and changing the facts a little bit, but it's all done in pure love. We can't imitate this kind of thing. So Lord Chaitanya knows that it is impossible for his associates in Puri to let him go. So he has to invent some excuse. "Please let me go to South India, because I need to search for my brother Vishwaroop." Now, who could deny that that was a good reason? Of course, Mahaprabhu already knew that Vishrupa had departed this world, departed from mundane vision. But still, it was a perfect excuse. Leave and go search for Vishrupa. Still, the devotees were... Their reaction to Lord Chaitanya's wanting to leave their association, we can't imagine. Lord Nityananda was the first to speak up. How can you go alone? You'll need a change of clothes, you'll need a water pot. You'll be chanting Hare Krishna, counting japa on your fingers. How can you manage all this alone? You need to go with others. Why don't you choose a few others to accompany you? They can be anyone you like. But by the way, let me mention, I know all the paths going to South India. In this way, Nityananda Prabhu put himself forward. You can pick anyone you like. You should not go alone. But of course, I do know all the roads. I do know all the paths. Now Lord Chaitanya had to bring up all the incidents from the past. The last time when I wanted to go to Vrindavan, it was you who made this conspiracy and I wound up at Advaitacharya's house in Chandipur. Not only that, on our way to Puri, I entrusted my danda to you and it disappeared. In other words, are you now want to guide me to South India? And then Lord Chaitanya went down the list with all the associates around him, pointing out faults. Damodar Pandit has done this, this one has done that. It sounded like he was criticizing them. Actually, he was glorifying them. But in order to be able to go on his mission and to South India, create some breathing space for himself because the pressure of love was so intense. We don't understand that kind of love. We've never, on the material plane, we've never experienced such love. To feel the impact of the love of Lord Chaitanya's associates and understand why he had to create some space, some breathing room. It's hard for us. So Lord Chaitanya began describing their faults when actually he was tasting their sublime qualities. So Nityananda Prabhu was the first one that he blamed for interfering with his leelas. Of course, Lord Nityananda is an intimate part of Lord Chaitanya's leelas. But Lord Chaitanya presented, you are interfering. Enough is enough. I want to go alone. Seeing that Lord Chaitanya was so determined, Nityananda, then he had a fallback plan. All right, you won't take me, you won't take any of your known associates. I have a new man. Krishnadas, he'll go. Please, take him with you. He can assist you. He's not one of your inner circle, so to speak, so none of us will feel bad. You take him. He's a new man. Take him with you. That was the mercy of Lord Nityananda upon this devotee. But then you know what happened in South India. This devotee got into trouble. even though he was associating with Lord Chaitanya. Srila Prabhupada points out that this shows that the jiva always has independence, even when the jiva is associating with Lord Chaitanya. When Lord Chaitanya returned from South India to Puri, after greeting all the devotees, he had to deal with this situation caused by Krishna Das. I don't want to see him again. Do something about him. Get him away. I'm through with him. Krishna Das began to cry. He was being banished by Lord Chaitanya. But it was Nityananda Prabhu who stood up for him. We have some service for him to do. Would that be all right? He can go to Navadvipa and notify the devotees there of your return. In that way, Nityananda Prabhu kept Krishna Das engaged in devotional service. It was Nityananda Prabhu who gave him the service of accompanying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to South India. And it was Nityananda Prabhu, when Krishna Das returned after falling, Nityananda Prabhu kept him engaged in devotional service. We do not want to fall, but still we're praying to Lord Nityananda to please keep us engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya. That is our fervent, heartfelt prayer. The age of Kali is very treacherous. Living in the age of Kali is like being haunted by a ghost. What is that ghost? The ghost of material advancement. Simply by adjusting in my material life, I will be happier, I'll be more prosperous, I'll be satisfied. This is the ghost that is haunting everyone. The solution is not material. It can't even be seen with material vision. This is why we depend on Lord Nityananda. That moonlight from his lotus feet allows us to see through the illusion that material adjustment will help our situation. Only when we understand this genuine solution can we be of some value to ourselves and the world. So today let us meditate deeply on the only relief we'll get in the scorching, blazing fire of material existence. And that blazing fire is caused by our thinking. Material advancement, material adjustment will improve our situation. There's a big difference between maintaining our lives in this world while understanding the main focus is our bhakti development. There's a difference between that and being haunted by the ghost of material achievement, advancement, and adjustment. There's a big difference. How the devotee lives, maintaining in whatever ashram the devotee occupies, that is one thing. But the ghost of material achievement, advancement, adjustment is another thing. What seems to be an insurmountable problem, how to live in this world, how to cope with this world, how to find time, this can be solved by Lord Nityananda's mercy, We can't do it ourselves. We're too weak. We're very feeble in the age of Kali. We're very slow. The intelligent person is quick to take advantage of Lord Nityananda's mercy. Understanding we have no material resources great enough to come out of this illusion. We need superior power. By Lord Nityananda's mercy, we can execute the instructions of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Nityananda fulfills all of Lord Chaitanya's desires. Therefore, if we take shelter of Lord Nityananda, certainly we'll be able to progress in our following instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We cannot conceive of Lord Chaitanya without conceiving of Radha and Krishna, and vice versa. We cannot conceive of Radha and Krishna without thinking of Lord Chaitanya. Emphasizing one without the other is faulty. Similarly, we cannot, as we spoke this morning, focus on Lord Chaitanya and forget Lord Nityananda, and we can't focus on Lord Nityananda and forget Lord Chaitanya. My request to you all is please don't feel overwhelmed by the ever-increasing material problems of the day. Harder and harder hours at work, higher and higher food prices, disturbances from nature in reaction to human beings' misuse of the earth and its resources. More than ever, we can understand what we have going for us, our strengths. Our strengths are not our own. The more that we understand that the mercy of Lord Nityananda is factual, it's not some religious imagination, it's not religious folklore, it's not religious mythology. If we take advantage of that mercy of Lord Nityananda, we'll see our way through all the intricacies of Kali Yuga. And especially, we'll be able to free ourselves from the ghost of thinking material adjustment, advancement, improvement will solve our problems. Then we can say with full conviction, Nittai Pada Kamala Koti Chandra Shushitala. Do you normally take questions, or we should have kirtan? Huh? Archie! All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.